We have three short Bible readings this morning from Philippians, Ephesians, and James. They're all found in chapter 4 and verses 1 to 3. So that's Philippians chapter 4, Ephesians chapter 4, and James chapter 4 and verses 1 to 3.
Philippians 4. Therefore, my brothers and sisters, you whom I love and long for, my joy and crown, stand firm in the Lord in this way, dear friends. I plead with you, Euodia. I plead with you, Syntyche, to be of the same mind in the Lord. Yes, and I ask you, my true companion, help these women, since they have contended at my side in the cause of the gospel, along with Clement and the rest of my co-workers, whose names are in the book of life. Ephesians 4. As a prisoner for the Lord, then I urge you to live a life worthy of the calling you have received. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Make every effort to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace.
And James chapter 4, verses 1 to 3. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You desire but do not have, so you kill. You covet but cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. When you ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, that you may spend what you get on your pleasures.
Good morning. It's good to see you all. I want to ask you a question. Who did you last fall out with? Deliberately loaded, doesn't give you an opt-out clause. Some of you, probably it was this morning, could have been the cat that got in your way, so you kicked it. Even the imaginary cat. Some of you immediately will be thinking about something that happened many, many years ago. We're looking at ladies in the New Testament, and just in case you think we're picking on ladies, we're not. It's just a great way of looking at different aspects of the New Testament. But also, just you think we're picking on ladies who fell out, because the Bible reading this morning is about two ladies, Euodia and Syntyche. Never quite sure how to pronounce them. Some preachers say one was really called Euodius and the other one was Soon Touchy. I'm glad some of you haven't heard that before. Or some of you are just being polite. Anyway, but these two ladies fell out. And it's clear, as Paul writes to them in Philippi, and he's pleading with them, and he's pleading with people around them, look, help these ladies get it together. Help them to make peace. And this is strange coming from Paul, because Paul fell out with his best mate. If you read Acts chapter 15, they'd come to this momentous decision in Acts chapter 15, and Paul and the guy who'd sponsored him and mentored him and encouraged him along the way, the guy who'd gone on missionary journeys with him and stood by his side in the gospel, that those two guys, Paul and his friend Barnabas the encourager, were sent out to tell good news that they decided at this big council meeting in Jerusalem that all the Christian world were to hear about. And as they're about to set off, Paul and Barnabas had such a bad quarrel or fight that they didn't work together anymore. They parted company. So there's Paul going off to preach. I always wonder what it would have been like for him the first time he got up to preach. I mean, in Corinthians, he writes, and he says, we have this gospel of reconciliation. I wonder, as he preached this gospel of reconciliation, he had the sting and the pain of this quarrel or fight that he had with Barnabas ringing in his heart as much as it was ringing in his ears. And so he knows when he writes to people like Syntyche and Euodia, he knows what it feels like to have fallen out. So let's have a look at this passage this morning briefly and think about it. So what do you do when you fell out with somebody or they fell out with you? What do we need to do? What can we learn from the Bible that helps us resolve relationships? And Paul writes to these ladies, we kind of dig back into the book of Acts. Whenever you're reading some of Paul's letters, kind of it's good to dig back into Acts and find out what was going on in those situations. And when you begin to read in Acts chapter 16 and Acts chapter 17, you find out that in Philippi and in the whole area of Macedonia, there were actually prominent women who were coming to know Jesus Christ. In Acts chapter 16, Luke says, not a few prominent women. Oh, for me, that means loads of them. Not a few means lots. Lots of prominent or important women, wealthy, or maybe involved in their husbands, being involved in diplomacy or government or seats of power. And then later on in chapter 17, twice Paul speaks about prominent women in this whole area of Macedonia where Philippi was, about those people coming to the Lord. And here he speaks about these two ladies, Euodia and Syntyche. He says that they were loyal yoke fellow. They contended at his side in the cause of the gospel. Those are kind of phrases you think, well, you kind of get the feel that Paul was blokish, don't you? You know, they had this entourage of men and they kind of went around preaching the good news, telling people about Jesus. But here he's saying, alongside him, working with him in proclaiming and telling the story of Jesus, telling the good news, these two ladies were with him. And they were one with him and they worked together on the team, but now for some reason, they've fallen out with each other. So Paul, then, it says twice. I love the way Gareth picked that up. It actually says twice. I plead with Euodia, and I plead with Syntyche. The word used there is the word we might use when we're calling out loudly. You know, if I'm shouting one of you from a distance, you know, I'm going, Jackie! Or Catherine! Or Paul! John! Calling out loudly, it's got some strength behind it, hasn't it? And Paul's shouting, Euodia, I'm pleading with you. Syntyche, I'm pleading with you. What's he saying? Agree with each other. So he's writing a letter. It's almost like, you know, if he was doing it on a word processor today, I know what I would do with this bit. I'd highlight it so I could then make it bigger. I would put it up to about 16 or 17 points on the fonts rather than 12. And then I'd make it red. And then I'd capitalize it all. And then I'd make it bold. So that if they're reading it, and remember this was read out loud, whoever's reading it would go, I plead with you, Euodia! Because they get it. That's what Paul's doing here. Why? Why? Well, first of all, they've worked alongside him. He knows their heart. He knows who they are. Even though they've disagreed and fallen out, Paul knows these two ladies. He values them. He values them enough to say, ladies, please. People, please. Whatever your differences are, please deal with them. You know the problems we have when we fall out with somebody? We immediately devalue them. It's their fault. They did it wrong. And wrong means they go down in my estimation. And I don't have to deal with them again because they've been wrong with me. We devalue them. But Paul doesn't do that. He lifts them up. They've been alongside me in the gospel. They're dear to me. And because they're dear, because I value them highly, I'm pleading. Pleading with you to get this right, to sort it out. But I think there's a bigger reason than just Paul valuing them. Paul values unity. Paul values being one with each other in Jesus Christ. Time and time again, when you read about Paul, and we've already mentioned when he wrote to the Corinthian church, he talked about this amazing gospel, this good news about reconciliation. Paul knew that unity comes from the heart of God. It's a massive theme in Scripture, in the Bible. Remember at the very beginning when God was creating this universe? And he said, let us make man in our image. And then it says, male and female created he them. God, I don't say couldn't, but it's almost like for God to create in his image, he had to create male and female. He had to create community. Let us make in our image is to make in community. Cut community in half and you've got common unity. Out of who God is, Father, Son and Spirit, one God in community, in unity, God creates us in his image. He's made us for community. I am more who I am because I'm a part of you. You are more who you are meant to be because, sorry about this, you're a part of me. We're more human when we are united with each other than when we're falling out or separate and finding ourselves on our own. And Paul pleads with these two ladies so strongly because Paul knows that to be united is somehow to reflect who God is and because of who God is, how he's made us. Do you get that? Do you get why you're here this morning? Yeah, we're here to worship God. We know that. We're here to listen to God's word. We know that. You're actually here to be gathered together. To be gathered together as one. So when you fall out, and when things go wrong, and they do, we've just seen it went wrong with Paul and Barnabas, it went wrong with Euodia and Syntyche, it goes wrong between us. Let's be real about that. Paul would write and say, I plead with you, get it together. Because unity is so important. Jesus simply said, what was it in John's Gospel, John 13? By this will all men know that you are my disciples, because you have love one for another. So Paul writes to these ladies and pleads with them because he values them. He's not devalued them because they've fallen out. And that's what we tend to do. He lifts them up and says, they're so important to me. I want them to be united again. But also because he sees this incredible, incredible theme of the oneness of God being made in us. So we become the oneness of humanity in each other. So powerful. And that's why he pleads. I guess a good question we could ask is, why do we fall out? And I love this passage. It's a strong passage from James. But James says, what causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from desires that battle within you? Ah, that's a bit of a kind of a below the belt thing, isn't it? Because James is writing and I know what causes fights. It's him. He did it to me. I know what causes fights. It's her. She did this thing. That's what we do, don't we? And James says, no, that doesn't cause fights. What causes fights is the war in here. The war in here. That's what causes fights. It's what's going inside you that decides the battle and the battleground. What causes fights and quarrels? Don't they come from your desires that battle within? You desire, but you do not have. You covet, but you don't get what you want, so you quarrel and you fight. Everything from two children playing together and one of them playing with a toy that the other one wants, to somebody doing something in your home that cuts across what you wanted, what you'd planned, what you desired, and now it's not going to happen that way. And so you're cross. So you're angry because you didn't get what you wanted. There was a king. His name was Ahab. And Ahab at a kind of a summer palace, you know, his kind of Israelite version of Sandringham or Balmoral. And he would take him off to his summer palace for his holidays, and it was great there, he loved it. It was a good place to chill out after all the business of being king. And so he got to his summer palace, and I don't know whether he was walking on the walls of his palace or on the rooftop one day, and he kind of looked over and he saw this beautiful vineyard owned by a guy called Naboth. And he looked at the vineyard, and he got to thinking, you know, summer palace, summer holidays are great, but this place is missing something. And I know what it's missing. It's missing a vegetable garden. Now, I wouldn't think like that. If I'm on hot summer holidays, vegetable garden is the front row of Tesco's, okay? So that's, you know, you don't want to go digging vegetables on your summer holidays. But anyway, that's what King Ahab thought. So he went to Naboth. He says, Naboth, it's a senior vineyard. It's right next to my palace. It would make a great vegetable plot. He said, I'll buy it from you. And we have to understand that inheritance of land, particularly in the Old Testament, particularly in farmers, is so strong. It's a deep inheritance. And Naboth says, the land is not for sale, O king. And Ahab goes, no, come on, what? Name your price, come on, you know what guys do, don't you? Look, you know, set the top line and we'll fight it downwards. You know, this is the Near East, you know, you're used to bargaining, and Naboth just stands his ground. And, sorry, O king, the land is not for sale. And no matter what Ahab does to get his vegetable plot, in the end, he doesn't get what he wants. What does James say? They come from desires. Battles come from desires within. You desire, but you don't have. You kill. You covet because you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. What did Ahab do? He did what any self-respecting bloke would do. He went and laid down on his bed and he sulked so much that he couldn't eat. Okay? That's what he did. And his wife comes in. And what's up, darling? Nothing. No, come on, there must be something wrong. You haven't had your dinner. Nothing. Oh, come on, tell me. No, it's all right. It's all right. Darling, I can see there's nothing wrong. Just go away. Oh, there is something wrong. Is it that conversation I saw you having with the farmer next door? Maddie? Oh, what did he say to you? Nothing. Oh, come on. And so Jezebel just slowly wheedles out what's wrong with King Ahab. And in the end, Ahab says, I wanted the land. The next door, I thought it'd make a great vegetable plot, and he wouldn't sell it, no matter what I did. And I'm the king, and he wouldn't sell it to the king, for goodness sake. So he turns over and sulks on his bed, and Jezebel goes out. And Jezebel, if you know the Old Testament at all, was a plotter. She was a wily, wicked plotter. And she plotted against this man Naboth, to the point that she was able to accuse him in public of wrong, to the point that the leaders condemned him, to the point that he was stoned to death. And King Ahab, he got his vegetable plot. So the story ended brilliantly, didn't it? And what did James say? You desire, but you don't have. You kill. You kill. You covet, because you cannot get what you want, so you quarrel and fight. What do? Time and time again, the reason we've fallen out with somebody is because they didn't do it my way. Because my way is the right way, and your way is the highway. In Christian circles, we're really good, because we say to Christians, it's okay. However you want to worship, that's fine. You do it your way, and we'll do it his way. That's what we do. Or we're in the place where we say, you know, if you want to get along with me, the best thing you can do is agree with me. We like that. We like it when people agree with us, because that values us, doesn't it? They've got the same opinion as me. And when people haven't, then they're down there. Or with Ahab and Naboth, it's give me what I want. And I'll be happy as long as I get what I want. And all those things have the amazing potential of creating war in our souls. They're like grenades, but they don't go off out there. They go off in here. They create havoc in our hearts and hatred towards others. And Paul pleads, don't cause the pain. Don't make the hurt worse. Don't let misunderstanding stop you from being united with somebody. Don't let your anger or your impatience or your bitterness, don't let your hatred, don't let your envy, don't let the murder of your soul loose because it wreaks destruction. James puts it so powerfully, uncomfortably. And read a passage like this. If those kind of things prevent us from falling out, what helps us put it together? Well, we turn then to this passage in Ephesians, where Paul's writing again. And some powerful, wonderful phrases, full of strength, but incredibly full of grace. Listen to what he says. Be completely humble. What does that mean? I mean, it's a nice phrase. It means you say, I am sorry, I am wrong. I'm doing marriage prep with young couples. I ask, which one of you is most likely to say sorry in your partnership? So always need somebody willing to say sorry. Humility means that I am willing to say, I am sorry, I am wrong. Be completely gentle, Paul says. Please, can we patch this up? Please, can we sit down with a cup of coffee? Can we talk about the pain and the hurt, even if it causes a few more tears? But let's break through to a place where we're patching this up. Let's be gentle with each other. Let's not use words that hurt. Let's resolve to use words that heal. Let's not use attitudes that are going to harm each other again. Let's come with attitudes that help each other to begin to walk together again. Be patient. I'll wait for you. I know you're struggling with me at the moment, but I'd love there to be a time when we can sit down and talk and forgive each other and move on together. I will be patient. I will wait for you. Bear with one another in love. I love you and I forgive you. And Paul then writes, make every effort. If you ever do physics, you learn that one unit of energy, one measurement of energy is an erg. And that's the word he uses here. Erg is effort. It's work. It's energy, and Paul says, make every energy. Do what it takes, he's saying. Do what it takes to keep the unity of the Spirit through the bond of peace. How God has made you to be in unity, do what it takes to live that unity out together. Whatever it takes. I had a friend who was a leader, and things went wrong between us. And I'm the kind of guy, and many of you know, I like being liked. And don't look at me any devalued, because we're all like that, really. Some of us just haven't realized it yet. We like being liked, don't we? And I didn't like it that this friend and I weren't singing off the same page or whatever, and he'd clearly done wrong to me. He clearly left me in a place where I was hurting. So I'm not going to go until I sense God is telling me it's time to go. So I kind of prayed and I kept an open heart and I waited. And one day I felt, yeah, it's time to go. And I made an arrangement to go and see him. And I got on my bike and I was pedaling off to see him. And chuntering away in my spirit to myself and what I was going to say and how I was going to put him right and all that. And God, the Holy Spirit, just spoke to me like this. And he said, don't you say a thing tonight. Don't you do a thing tonight. You're just going to have coffee with him. And you're going to be his friend. Don't you address this. You're just there to rebuild a relationship. Don't go to the hard stuff. So I went. I thought, okay, Lord, I can do that bit. Because I can talk about football and rugby and work. I can do all that stuff. So that's all we did. For an hour, we just talked over coffee and chatted about the state of the nation and the state of the football league and all that stuff. And then he looked at me and he said, you know, I need to apologize to you. I looked at him and said, I didn't come here for that tonight. I came just to be friends. He said, but I need to apologize to you. Some of the way things happened, he said, I'm sorry. I was wrong. And we were brothers again. We were brothers again. And I guess what Paul's really saying to us today and what God's word is saying to you today and to me is this phrase, I plead. I cry out as loudly as I possibly can. Whatever is wrong between you and another brother or you and another sister, I cry out. It's not worth the war in your soul. Whatever you do, I cry out. Plead with you. That's the word Paul uses. I cry out and plead with you. Put it right. I've used this before, but it's powerful to me. It comes from a statement from another faith, but it's so true. And this other faith statement is simply this. To be angry with somebody else and remain angry, it's as if you drank a cup of poison expecting them to die. I plead with you. Read Ephesians 4, 1 to 3 and put that into practice as steps towards peace. God bless. Thank you.